This episode is presented by Shaxbury Cider.
Hi, I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup.
So every day the shutdown continues to grow is another day that there will be a backlog.
This week, we're looking at the unexpected ways the government shutdown has impacted our food system.
There are nearly 1.6 million New Yorkers who rely on SNAP to feed themselves and their families every single day. There is a real impact on our friends and neighbors.
A lot of farmers rely on commodity loans at the end of the year. Since the offices are not open, those loans aren't available to them.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to HR and Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick, and it's 2019.
What?
First show of the year.
Oh my God.
Wow. I'm Kat Johnson, the communications director here at HRN, and I'm here, of course, with Katie Mosman Wadler, our executive director.
Hey, Kat. Thanks for being on this Thursday. And we also have in the studio making us sound great, Amanda Wang. What up, Amanda?
Hey,
Amanda.
We have some very special guests here today.
We do. We are joined by two of the leaders at Momofuku Nishi. We have Emma Conroy, the general manager, and Nick Tamboro, the chef de cuisine. Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks.
We're excited to talk to you both more about your backgrounds and your food opinions and Nishi and Momofuku and all of the things. But first, we have a couple quick announcements and some headlines. Announcements are pretty short this week. The one thing I wanted to point out is that we recently got back from San Francisco. Ooh, what was that?
That was the outgoing mail sound. I think that was us flying back from San Francisco.
Oh. I wish my flight had been that fast. So we got back from San Francisco. We were there for the Good Food Awards and the Good Food Mercantile. We, as we have been doing for the past few years, recorded the entire Good Food Awards ceremony. The speakers this year were Carlo Petrini, translated by Patrick Martins from Italian, Jessica B. Harris, and Sarah Wiener, the executive director of the Good Food Foundation. It was my first time being there, and it was really, really inspiring, honoring all of these makers who are making food the right way and the hard way, as they reiterated. It takes a lot out of someone to make food the right way. And we also were there at the Good Food Mercantile, and we did a lot of really fun interviews and conversations with people that were showing their different foods. So please go check out Heritage Radio Network On Tour, episodes 203, which is the award ceremony, and then 204 through 207 are from the Mercantile. Quick hint, 207 is a little hilarious because it's Patrick Martins and Emily Pearson of the Main Course OG just doing rapid fire interviews, asking people what dish Meghan Markle should serve to the people of the United Kingdom to create peace and to get the press off of her back. Amanda edited that, so she's like in the booth laughing about it. It's very entertaining, and the answers are very interesting and surprising.
I would have no idea.
I want to also put out what to make. Yeah. What Megan should make.
Yeah, she's having a hard time.
Yeah. And mac and cheese was a popular answer. They were you can't go wrong with mac and cheese. But then some people got very specific.
I thought she should do like olives, because like the olive branch. Mm. So like something like super olive heavy.
Well, she's the avocado toast like guru, apparently.
Oh.
You can put olive oil on avocado toast.
But so yeah, no, there's this whole thing on social media that somebody posted that she makes the best avocado toast, which to me feels really basic, but
maybe exactly what's needed.
But hey, stick to what you're good at. You know what I mean? Like, if she's
at the very least, she'd win over the millennials.
If she's the queen of brunch, you know,
yeah,
maybe that's the way to get to the UK's heart. I don't know.
Yeah,
full American brunch.
Full American brunch.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. Agree. We're going to add that to their list.
We should just send her a letter.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to point out another episode from Mercantile, which was so, one, just unbearably sweet, and also has a lot of really good business advice if you are thinking about starting really any kind of food business. But this is a great one where Eli Cairo from Olympia Provisions interviewed his sister, who is the head of all things finance for Olympia Provisions. And so it's really amazing because you can see like their relationship and sort of begin to understand how they have not killed each other all these years. But also she's brilliant, and some really good recommendations in there for books and just some smart takeaways if you don't have a lot of time, but you know you need to pick up a little business know-how.
That's episode 205. Thank you. We have one episode about like business and then one about an open exchange of food and ideas. And then one is about like the past, present, and future of good food. So they're kind of curated episodes. You can pick what topic you're interested in and hear some really interesting people talk about them. Yeah, that's my plug.
Okay, I have an announcement, but it's a cryptic announcement about an announcement. So stay tuned to HRN Happy Hour next week for some literally like the biggest news of the year.
Mm, bum, bum, bum.
You better be there.
Cool.
All right. That's all I'm going to say about that. I think it's time for some headlines.
All right. Headlines.
Okay. If you've ever wanted to know a bit about who owns a restaurant before making a reservation, which there are many reasons to want to inquire for that these days, there is an app for that. So on this week's Tech Bites is what that show is
Tech
called.
Tech Bites.
Jennifer Leutze sits down with the creators of the Eat Okra app, which helps users find restaurants owned by African Americans so you can go there. And today, Eat Okra covers 20 cities and 1,200 restaurants. Check them out.
I'm downloading that. Next up, Foodprint is a new platform that helps educate eaters about the effects of food production on people and the planet. This is a big topic at Good Food, by the way. On this week's Farm Report, host Lisa Hell talks with the director of Foodprint to talk about the site's goals, its detailed reports on farming and environmental impact, and what a sustainable diet really looks like.
Andrew Friedman recently went to a chef's event in the Cayman Islands. You may have been seeing streams of photos, as I have been, making me very jealous this cold and rainy week. As you might assume, he talked to a lot of famous chefs when he was there. Go figure. So on this week's episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs, you can hear Eric Repair talk about how living in New York and practicing Buddhism have affected him as a chef. And Dominique Krenn also dishes on her tomboy youth and willingness to take on bullies. Also, Andrew Zimmern and Emeril Lagasse are making appearances as well. You may have also seen photos if you follow our good friend Bob the Bartender. He's also at the Cayman Cookout. So feel jealous, or maybe you were there, in which case I'm also jealous of you.
And Andrew was there, as well as Greg and Darren Bresnitz of Snacky Tunes. So if you want more Cayman Cookout content, you can listen to the upcoming episodes of Snacky Tunes. I don't know how much content I could really take, though. That's just going to make me bitter.
I mean, the sun did come out just now. Like, actually, when I don't know if it was the case when you walked over, because you came before me, Kat, but when I walked over here just now, I was like, did I die? Because the sky just was like, it looked like the entire sky was a rainbow in a weird, you know when there's a rainbow and you get that funny feeling? It was like the whole thing was doing that. Maybe I just like haven't seen the sun in a while and it's been really terrible out.
But yeah, you're having major seasonal affective disorder and going a little bit crazy. That's how I feel.
I might be hallucinating, yeah. But it was like a surreal sky just now. So if you're listening live and you're in New York, like, please go for a walk outside. It's like unimaginable how cool the sky looks.
It's your only chance. All right. So once again, our guests are Nick Tamboro and Emma Conroy from Momofuku Nishi. I'm going to read quick bio points for each of you because you have very interesting backgrounds. So first up, Nick began his culinary career in Boston. He worked at restaurants like Flower Bakery, Savinor's Butcher. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. And Market and Radius. Upon moving to New York, he joined Momofuku at Noodle Bar, which is a super like fast-paced style of service. And then he moved to Belgium where he worked at Indewolf. Am I saying that right too?
Yeah, you're
nice.
Right on.
Okay, which is now closed.
Yep.
And it's a Michelin-starred restaurant from Chef Kobe Desmaraults. And then came back to New York, rejoined Momofuku at Co., helped reopen the restaurant in the new location at Extra Place. And then he was promoted to sous chef and then moved to Momofuku Nishi to become chef de cuisine. So bounced around Momofuku and then did some other awesome stuff in between.
Yeah.
Any highlights?
Highlights of my life?
Yeah.
Momofuku?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you kind of nailed it. I feel like you already, that's me.
I traced the path.
What about you? Yeah. There was in between.
Well, okay. So I left and came back to Momofuku twice.
Yeah.
Which has been a good experience. First time I went to Belgium to work with Kobe, which was awesome. He's like an amazing dude. And yeah, Indiewolf is now closed. So I feel very fortunate to have like been there at that like place and time, because it's a really special place. So I'm glad I got to see it and be part of like its history and all that. And now he has a restaurant called Chambres Separées, which is in Ghent, which I haven't gotten to go to yet, but it seems amazing. And then the second time after I left Co, I worked at Co for 3 years, just did some traveling around the U.S., went on a cross-country road trip for like 3 months.
Wow.
And then...
Where did you go?
Everywhere.
The whole thing?
Yeah, just did a big loop all around. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really get to like the center of the country, like Miss Colorado, but, you know, a bunch of other places. And I worked here for a little bit at Blanca,
cool.
Just for a short time.
Helped just out, next door.
Yeah. Helped out some friends there and some other spots, and then came back to Momofuku.
Just keep coming back.
Yeah.
Coming back for
Can't
more.
Stay away.
Emma Conroy is a Providence, Rhode Island native. She worked at Chow Fun Food Group and 10 Prime Steak and Sushi before she moved to New York City in 2011. Since moving here, she's worked at La Conda Verde and Red Cat in Chelsea. May it rest in peace as well. We love Red Cat. While there, Emma went through the American Sommelier Association and rose to beverage manager. Then she worked at Cork Buzz under Master Somm Laura Maniac. Is that?
Manic.
And Laura was on Somm.
Laura's on Somm 3. Yes. And I believe she's in Somm 1 and 2 and in Somm Cressy. But I hate to admit, I haven't seen Somm 3 yet.
So. I have. It's great.
I know. I keep meaning to watch it.
You were then promoted to director of ops at Cork Buzz, and then you joined Momofuku in 2016, and you're now the GM of Nishi.
Always have been.
Always have been.
Yeah. Probably won't always will be, you know. Eventually I'll have to do something else, but yeah, I joined Momofuku at Nishi about 9 months after it opened. Took over for Richard Hargrave, who is
in LA now.
He's in LA now, yeah. But he was leaving to go to Vegas, yeah. And then went and did Domo. And, you know, Dave has said on his podcast, he'll never open a restaurant without Rich. So,
yeah, I mean, he's been there. He was there for Ciobo, Toronto. And
he was
then,
at Co for a little bit. Yeah. Rich is a great guy.
Yeah.
Rich, you're welcome for the free press, by the way.
Yeah. So let's start with, when Nishi opened. Nick, were you there when Nishi opened? Or that was with Josh Pinsky, correct?
Yeah, that was with Josh. I was at Co at the time. Josh left Co to go work at Nishi. And then that's kind of like when I became sous chef, like after Josh went to Nishi. So
I feel like Nishi had like a ton of pressure on it when it opened. And there were like lovers and haters. But it's 3 years now.
Yeah, one of the things that I think was, I mean, neither of us were there for the beginning of Nishi, but when the space was acquired, it was, you know, thought to be the first West Side Momofuku venture, because, you know, obviously Noodle Bar and Somm Bar being in the East Village, and even having Malpesh uptown, but they were thinking of making it a Noodle Bar or maybe a Fuku, and then Josh was given this space, but it really had already been designed sort of in the old guard of Momofuku with like the communal tables and the minimalist, you know, aesthetic. And then Josh, you know, was brought onto the project, and eventually we, you know, I was there for part of it, but it felt like the menu and the style of service didn't fit the aesthetics of the space. So the decision was made to renovate. And obviously, Somm Bar went through a renovation as well. And, you know, just as Momofuku grew and expanded, we realized, you know, I'm sure more from the upper level, but at, you know, Nishi's level, that we wanted to really kind of redefine ourselves and embrace the idea of, you know, comfort, mm-hmm. and not just, like, what people thought of Momofuku as, like, loud music, like really kind of like this avant-garde, like we don't care. You know, everyone does really care. So it's interesting to see how like the space came together with the banquettes and really just the renovation of the whole restaurant and what has happened since then. And even just looking at Vegas opening and Major Domo and how like beautiful those spaces are and really like the, you know, I don't want to speak for anybody, but like the company is definitely grown in that way that, you know, like I think all of the new restaurants that are opening are incredibly beautiful, and not that the Minimalist wasn't, but you know, we're growing into a different phase of the like culinary world in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Nishi, almost the opening of Nishi, and again, you know, you guys weren't there at the original opening date, so not to like speak for you, but it opened at a point before Vegas, before LA, and before Somme was renovated. So it like happened at a very interesting like inflection point in the group as a whole. And so I think that even like reviews that could have been spun as being negative were just kind of not seeing the fact that there was something bigger happening at Momofuku.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. I mean, and when we opened Nishi, or when Momofuku opened Nishi, we were really trying to explore that no tipping idea. And it was clear that maybe it just didn't work in that space, or in, you know, not to say anything, but I'm not sure that it, like, how well it will work in the long run. Obviously, Danny Meyer has championed it, and I've never worked for him, so I can't say, you know, how happy everyone who works there is with it. But we went away from that, and I think, you know, that it was definitely an exploration into trying things. And Dave's big thing is, like, make smart mistakes and you know, keep trying new things, and if you fail, like, try again. And you know, that's really, I think, a core of what Momofuku is like, let's try to do something that maybe we haven't seen being successful or that no one else has ever done, and you know, we'll accept the losses and we will, you know, rise again and try something different. Like, we're never going to be solely defeated in the idea of, oh, this didn't work, we're just, you know, gonna keep going, or we're gonna scrap it. Like, we always do what we can to reimagine the restaurant. And I think Nishi is definitely an example of that. It feels like it's definitely been three, maybe different iterations in the time I've been there. And that's, I think, and we're doing very well. So it's really nice to see that, you know, hard work pays off in that way.
Can you talk more about this idea of smart mistakes and how you go about planning for those?
I don't think you really do plan for them.
How do you try to make your mistakes smart instead of dumb?
I think it's, you know, just trying to do things that we really believe in and coming up with an idea of, like, what can we do next? Like, never rest on your laurels. Like, just really keep pushing yourself. And in that way, I think we try to do things that have never been done before, or push ourselves to, like, expand upon these ideas or concepts. At Nishi, you know, specifically to, like, oh, we'll do these large format dishes and we don't know how it's going to go, or we're like changing the style of like the concept at lunch or whatever it might be, and just really like, try and go for things and, you know, not be afraid to fail. I think so, that's the biggest thing. Don't be afraid to fail, because it seems like an impossible idea.
Right. So I should say, I don't know if I've mentioned this on this show before, but I worked at Momofuku, but on the paper cut side, which paper cut is the office.
We call it home base now, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, everything changes. But I think that what I always picked up from the restaurants, the chefs and the GMs and everyone that worked there, is that it was almost always the assumption when you did try something new, like the assumption was just assume it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, that's kind of like the Momofuku way.
Yes, like it's like an underdog mentality. It's like, assume it's not going to work. And then to speak to your question, Katie, it's like, that's how you prepare for it. And you're planning for, like, it's probably going to be a failure. And then when it is a failure, you're like, what did we learn from it? It was always like, what did we learn?
Yeah, what did we learn? And then we're going to try to do it again anyway.
Yeah,
yeah, you like have to be pessimistic, but then you just like go through with it because you have to.
That sums up the Momofuku ethos, I think. Be pessimistic, but do it anyway.
Yeah, like we came up with this crazy idea. We're not really sure how to execute it. We're going to do it. We know it probably is not going to be great the first time around, but we're going to do it maybe two or three more times anyway, and take what we learned from that and apply it to trying to make it
It's also very scientific. It's like a weird scientific method.
It is.
Yeah. So, Nick, tell us about the menu now and what Nishi is looking like and tasting like these days.
Well, so when Nishi first opened, it was like a kind of a Korean and Italian mashup. And then they did the renovation and they decided to be like a full Italian restaurant for like whatever that means in the Momofuku world. It's like not really, you know, your typical Italian restaurant. So when I came on, I've never really cooked Italian food before, but I know Momofuku pretty well because I've worked for the company for 5 years. So Italian food like wasn't really in my wheelhouse, even though I'm Italian American, but it, honestly, it's like never really been my thing. And so to try to learn how to do that, has been an interesting experience. But we make a lot of pastas in-house, which is like a huge focus for us. We do like a pasta tasting menu. It's like 4 pastas and 2 desserts. But the approach that I try to take with it is not knowing anything about Italian food is kind of like, I think, our strength. We just kind of like...
Well, I wouldn't say we don't know anything about Italian food.
Not knowing as much as maybe someone that's like classically trained in Italian cuisine. Yeah, I see it as a strength for us because we don't have any preconceived notions about, like, what things are supposed to taste like, or, like, this sauce goes with this pasta, or, like, this region of Italy does things this way.
I think too, that, you know, we were never trying to be a straightforward Italian restaurant. And when Momofuku opened, obviously, like Nick said, like, it's Korean-Italian, because we... that really was the concept of it, but it was very difficult. It was heady. Like, people didn't necessarily understand what that meant. So they came and they're like, is it Italian? Is it is it noodle bar or sambar? And it really is. Once we reopened after renovation, it was really important to me and to Josh and to Nick that we were embracing the idea of Italian cuisine. Like, we make fresh pasta. We're like, take inspiration from those dishes. But at the same time, we still fit into the story of what Momofuku is. Like, if you've been to Sambar, you can come to Nishi and still experience something that feels like Momofuku. And whether it's ingredients or techniques or what have you, that story is still really there.
Well, what strikes me in hearing you talk about being Italian-American, but not like that not being your thing, sounds almost exactly the way Dave Chang used to talk about being Korean-American. But he went to Japan and wanted to open a ramen shop, and Korean was not the food he wanted to really be cooking. But then eventually, like, it becomes part of
the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think in if you look at it in that way, you could maybe argue that with you being at Nishi, it's one of the most Momofuku restaurants that there is.
Yeah.
I do think, totally. And there's a pork sandwich that we serve at lunch that is, I think, the staff favorite of, like, any dish that's served. Like, they come in to have it on their day off, and it's something that he pulled from.
Yeah, my mom used to make, like, I mean, it's just, like, a classic Italian-American, like, repertoire, like, pork chop with cherry peppers. So, like, this sandwich is inspired by that, but it's also, like, equally inspired by, like, a Japanese, like, katsu sandwich, so. And we do that kind of thing a lot, like, pulling from, like, different cuisines and stuff like that.
I'm curious to know more about, like, what you ate when you were young and like how much your mom's cooking has influenced you or not.
I mean, both my parents were really good cooks, but they didn't just strictly cook like Italian food or anything like that. It was, I mean, the good thing about it was they were always like trying new things just for fun. Like, my mom always had like a bunch of magazine subscriptions to like Food and Wine or like Gourmet or whatever, and would just like cut out recipes. She had like a binder of like all these recipes and just like try new stuff. So that was cool because I got to experience like a lot of that. But there wasn't like a specific focus. Like, we weren't like the super Italian American family where like there's like 30 family members on Sunday and you have like gravy. Like, we didn't.
Sunday dinner.
Yeah, we didn't do that. but yeah, there was some of that stuff.
Kind of changing topics totally, but has Nishi in the past 3 years garnered any major awards that the team's been like super or criticism that the team's been super excited about?
I wish.
Criticism?
Anything like any awards or like
Josh won a pasta award.
Oh. I don't know like what that organization is.
I know,
called.
And I feel like really bad that I don't remember. But
that's
he,
niche though. I like that.
So he what it was a pasta competition, and I think all other nine chefs were Italian.
I mean, that's awesome.
And Josh won.
Yeah.
And he got to go to Italy and like go around like southern Italy, and yeah, he was really proud of that, and obviously we were really proud of him. That was probably like, you know, the biggest thing that happened. Yeah, I mean, criticisms, there's been a lot of them. You know, opinions are opinions, like who am I to say, but I think that, you know, like it's difficult for like once we reopen, like a lot of the criticisms came before we renovated and before I was there, and I think that we've done a pretty good job of, you know, figuring out who we are. Like every restaurant I think is, you know, like has a growing period. Mm-hmm. And definitely like I said, the concept when we opened was like a little bit heady. It's like, are you Asian? Are you Korean? Are you Japanese? And then how does the Italian idea fit into that? And I feel like we've really sort of settled in that place of we're a Momofuku restaurant. We make fresh pasta. We pull from the idea of Italian. Our wine list is very Italian. And, you know, we have over 300 bottles. Our beverage manager, Andy, does a great job of, like, bringing in things that are, again, you know, I think the wine list and the menu really correlate in the way that, like, we're not doing something traditional. It's not. We have Nebbiolo. We have Barolo and, Brunello. But we're pulling from, like, lesser-known varietals, younger producers, people who are doing different things, or even that, like, Cali, like Ital, like varietal thing that's going on, all these like California wine producers who are making Italian varietals, you know, out there and like really introducing things to people that are newer or we're excited about. And it's sort of the same. It's like we, you know, really care about what we do every day. And, you know, I think the food reflects that as well. It's not, it doesn't need to be pigeonholed. So,
sure. Well, so Nick, as someone who's been at Co has 2 stars. Inda Wolf had
one star. Yeah.
Is that something that you really, really want for Nishi? Is it something that you and your team put a lot of like time and thought into, or is that something that's like not really a priority day to day?
When I first started there, it's not something that I really like thought about, but I think, I mean, this year when the guide came out, I think we did a video shoot for Michelin earlier in the year. So we kind of hoped that like maybe we were like on their radar. But it didn't happen for us this year, but maybe next year. It would be nice. You know, I think it'd be awesome. I don't know. I don't understand Michelin's point of view in New York. I think a lot of people feel the same way. I think there's a lot of restaurants that have 1 star, and I think we're as good as many of those. So yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah. That's interesting that it's hard to understand the point of view. Do you think, besides like a video shoot, or is there any way to like know you're on a radar at all?
I have no idea. I wish I knew.
I don't think we know.
But yeah, because like there's just so many restaurants. Like, how do you make it to all of them? Like, I'm sure they revisit all the restaurants that have stars, but like as far as like new entries, I feel like that's like a little bit more like, how do you even know if you're like going to be considered?
I also think that, I mean, I don't really know, but I think that Michelin and a lot of this, you know, rating systems are trying to be more inclusive of different styles of restaurants. So like that, then the pool is even wider, which is a great thing. But
for an Italian restaurant, you're maybe facing a lot of competition within that niche.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely like, we're not trying to necessarily be like in the same pool as that, but we're our own thing, I think.
Like, yeah. Interesting. I've been thinking about that a lot lately since we're about to enter award season and James Beard Awards. And mm-hmm.
But how do you guys feel about the 50 best?
The new news about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday.
It's interesting. I don't know how I feel about it, mostly because I don't necessarily use 50 best to make dining decisions. If I did, I would be like, I'm mad.
Those places are like not really in my like weekly grabbing dinner after work rotation.
But I definitely remember working at Momofuku, and the 2 weeks before that list was coming out, there being like, you know, an underlying sense of like, is our Sambar and Co. going to move up or down? What's going to happen? And that everyone was like, we don't want to care, but we do care at the end of the day. I don't know.
A little bit like, how can you not care when it's like always nice to get an award and be recognized, but you also are thinking about like what's going on behind the scenes with these awards and what is the pool look like?
And what are the politics?
Yeah, there's a lot of politics.
I mean, it's at the best restaurant in the world can't then be considered again.
Yes.
And then what is that? How does that change the dynamic of?
So yeah, we should.
And then it's like, is that the best though?
Right, because like, if like the person that was on top's not eligible, and then someone else gets number one, it's like, well, did you only get it because they're not qualified to get it?
Right. So are you actually the second best in the third year? You're the third best.
It kind of cheapens it a little bit.
It feels like you're being like picked later in like a on the playground.
Right. Like the best like dodgeball player is like sick from school today, so you get picked first because he's homesick. Like.
Yeah,
except he's not homesick. He's actually still just as good as he ever
was. He's at home, like just chucking balls and dodgeball, you know. And
like,
I don't know. I think it's. I mean, it's the thing that I think I had the biggest hang up on with that, with them basically putting like the number one, all the number ones into like a winner circle of sorts, where like they're kind of retired.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what they're doing, which I think is kind of cool because it does allow fresh new recognition and things.
Yeah,
but that I don't know what they're calling it, but like a winner circle, essentially it's like the lifetime achievement pool. It has your Noma and it has your El Keller Deacon Roca, but it also has Obuyi. So they're putting restaurants that are no longer open along with restaurants that are definitely still open that could be, those are the ones we are saying,
keep
like if they're still the best, they're still the best.
And where's Obuyi's the pressure, not like the competition to overtake that,
right?
Because you want to be better than the best, and that goes away.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
also
you can't
like
see that someone like that was number one's like beneath you now. Like you can't, you know, get that.
And like, the thrill is gone.
It's also like
the thrill is gone.
Yeah.
If they reopen a new restaurant, they're then eligible.
Totally.
So.
There's a loophole.
Yeah.
A very expensive, laborious loophole.
Yeah.
Oh, but nonetheless. I'm pretty sure they can afford it.
Okay, we need to take a quick break.
Yes.
And then when we come back, we will carry on and then we will do a little trivia.
This episode is brought to you by Shaxbury Cider, who believe cider can be daring, complex, and eminently drinkable. Located in Vergennes, Vermont, Shaxbury make a broad offering of ciders, from the bright and fruity rosé to inventive small-batch wild apple fermentation. Each fall, Shaxbury takes to the hills of Vermont to forage for the wild and forgotten fruit that make up their Lost Apple Project. Shaxbury, producer of the first American-made PetNat cider, continues to experiment every year with limited edition ciders designed to spotlight locally foraged fruit. To learn more, visit Shaxbury.com or follow them on Instagram at Shaxbury. You fall for it, that you can
never just live the way you eat. Welcome back to HR and Happy Hour. We're here with Nick Timboro and Emma Conroy from Momofuku Nishi. And the commercial that we played today was very, very appropriate. Emma, can you tell us the connection between Momofuku and Shaxbury?
Yeah, so Shaxbury Cider has partnered with Momofuku for right now, which is only offered at Momofuku, and I think always will be, is our collaboration with them. So there's been two that have been released that you can get at Momofuku, and the third is being actually canned right now. So Jake Lewis, who is our wine director, and Andy Wedge, who's actually the beverage manager at Nishi, went up a couple weeks ago to Shaxbury Open Vermont and blended the newest cider. So stay tuned for that. We really love them, and they do a lot of great things with artisanal apples, and they really take care of their orchards, and it's definitely a cool project.
Oh, he did tell me the new one's rosé. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
You heard it
that's
first.
The little bit that I know about it.
Go drink it.
Yeah, Shaxbury's great. They really.
We love Shaxbury very, very much, too.
Yeah, I believe the second, there was the first collaboration, and there was 2.0, and so now 3.0 is being canned right now. 2.0 was in bottle. It was beautiful. Shout out to the Momofuku design team for all of their label work.
Oh, they're the best.
Brendan and Margaret, yes, and everybody, yeah.
They do a really, really great job. All right, so it's time for trivia. And our trivia.
She's good at trivia. I'm not.
It depends.
Our theme. Did you look at the answers, Katie?
I have not. I only saw the first one because it had a keyword that shook me.
Oh. We also write quizzes.
We have good questions.
We wrote a really intense quiz.
Oh, that quiz. I thought you were going to talk about like the niche questions, like the desert island vegetable or the coat and jacket.
Oh, no, no. Okay. What's the difference between a coat and jacket? Oh. Like, it's a whole long thing.
Like philosophical questions.
Well, and it's a theme, and we ask everybody at the restaurant, and everyone answers, and it, you know, they change here and there. But we also wrote a quiz. It was for the staff that was pretty funny.
It was about like the
were there correct answers?
Yeah. It was about like, you know, who is like out of the last 5 years, who is the top 50 best? Just
to, like, and you had to name for each year. You had to name who is the best restaurant.
Yeah, like just think
that's challenging.
In order,
I haven't been keeping up anymore.
Oh, that's tricky.
Yeah. And we wrote and we gave it to everybody.
I'd be like Noma.
Just as fun. Obviously, no one was graded, but then I mean we judged.
Did
them
you fire
as
anybody
people.
On the results?
No.
Of the quiz?
No.
But I said we had a question that was like what. If you were stranded on a desert island, what is the one vegetable that you could have and the one fruit that you could have? And I said that I would not hire anyone that answered potato as their vegetable. But a surprising number of the staff said that they would answer
like,
potato.
On a desert island, why would you want a potato?
Could you, can you like season the potato?
Yeah. You don't have salt water.
It's versatile, but if you can't do anything with it.
Well,
what do you want to eat a potato?
You don't have butter.
Butter.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Maybe you could find a clam or something out there.
Well, Nick, would you judge less a sweet potato than a regular potato? Because sweet potatoes
are
really
good. No,
he's going
to judge that more.
Well, I know they're good for you.
They are really good for you, and they're sweet and they're nice.
Yeah, that's true.
That's better than a russet.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
A potato every day with like fish you catch out of the ocean, though. No.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this trivia is about Italian American foods.
Oh boy.
And drinks.
Okay. cool.
We're gonna start like hopefully pretty easy. I tried to like not make them too insane. Okay. Question number one: what New York City pizzeria is recognized as being the first in the U.S. opened in 1905?
Oh, that's the one in Soho, right?
Is it Joe's Pizza?
I thought it was the one in Soho.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I actually don't know the answer to this.
It's
because
the coal oven one.
This is not the question that was triggering. You must have edited since I saw that. Okay.
I'll give you a hint. I don't know if it'll help or not. It probably won't help Katie.
what are you saying?
It's a football reference. It's also the name of a football award.
Oh, well, I don't know nothing about sports.
Oh, well, the Heisman Trophy.
The other one for the defense.
What? How do you know this? What is a Heisman
Trophy? Nick, I'm with you.
the other one
starts with an L.
Ugh. Oh, I know
Lombardi's. Lombardi's.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Cool, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is the Heisman Trophy, basically the Heisman for defense.
I knew one of them.
I'm teaching you things about football too. Okay, question number two: what slang term for Capicola became a well-known stereotype thanks to its use on The Sopranos?
The Gabagool.
Gabagool.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to the Mooly Gooly to get some Gabagool.
Question. Love Gabagool.
Question number three.
Would you put Gabagool on a potato?
Yeah, I mean.
Why not?
I think it's better than just a potato.
Only if the potato's fried. I think that would be good.
Yeah.
Wait, what Sardinian delicacy that is only available on the black market is made by leaving pecorino outside with part of the rind removed to allow larvae to grow inside of it?
Holy shit.
Kill me now.
I know nothing about this.
I actually feel like I do know about this. I have absolutely no idea what it's called.
It's like queso manzo or something.
You're very, very close. Casu marzu.
Okay, I was like close.
Whoa,
I
so what? Tell me about this.
So it's illegal. It's illegal to make this, but like people in Sardinia do it.
Okay.
Yeah, even there, but they still do it and they sell it like on the black market. But it basically doubles the value of the pecorino because it's like such a delicacy there.
But it's literally like you look at it and it's moving. It's crawling.
I know. Yeah. Because once the larvae die, then it's like very unsafe to eat.
That's disgusting.
Isn't it gross? Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to eat them.
No. All right.
Does it taste different?
Yeah, it tastes like...
funky, like really funky.
Like, imagine how Jasmine feels about rice, but like cheese.
Yeah.
We have a dessert. We have a host who doesn't eat rice.
She thinks it looks like maggots.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it does.
You might have actually just ruined rice for me, which I didn't know was that's possible.
Terrible.
No, never. All right, question number four. Tiramisu is one of my favorite Italian desserts, made from sweetened mascarpone, cocoa, and coffee-dipped ladyfingers. What does the word tiramisu translate to in English?
These questions are getting so much harder.
I feel like it has something to do with, like, a mountain, maybe?
I was going to say something like to do with throwing.
Snow. I have no idea.
Think about, like, what coffee does to you.
It lifts you up.
Yeah.
There you go. Pick me up or cheer me up is what this answer
That's why I thought mountain. I'm like, I feel like it, like it's like a high.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know why.
You're close.
Yeah, okay. That was my thought.
It gets you high. Yeah. It gets you high.
Elevation or just with caffeine. Whatever.
Can you make an alcoholic version of tiramisu? Like with brandy
isn't
or something?
It usually
I
alcoholic?
Thought it does
it's
have
It's called
booze.
The espresso martini.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
No, I think tiramisu has... I want to say rum, but that seems weird.
Well,
no.
I don't know. Brandy? I feel like in the U.S. people probably put like Kahlua in it.
Oh.
They definitely don't do that in
New
England.
We decided there should be a rejuvenation of espresso martinis.
Yeah,
also.
We're working on it at Nishi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and let me know when that happens.
In like liquid form or like pudding form?
No, like a liquid form.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what's like the most uncool thing you can think of and like how do you make that cool again?
Would you put like whipped cream on it?
No, absolutely not.
Good.
That's the other like ethos of Momofuku. What's not cool, and we're gonna make it cool.
Do you remember Rebecca who worked at PR?
Oh yeah.
So we were all talking about it one day, and she's like cottage cheese. She's like, how do you make cottage cheese
I'm
cool?
I'm on board with her,
and I was like, Rebecca, that's a very good point.
I am on board, and you know what's gonna make it happen is Cowgirl Creamery out in San Francisco makes clabbered cottage cheese, and it is so great.
What is
I
love cottage those cheese?
It's what? It's
what
like
makes, what makes it what is it?
It's
I don't
soft
even know.
Small curds.
It's curds.
It's like ricotta.
Cream.
It's like ricotta, yeah. But less cool.
Okay, but I've been eating a lot of cottage cheese
I
for my
it.
Breakfast with za'atar.
Yeah,
because I want like a
yes,
savory
it's
breakfast.
Good with
I'm
savory.
So not,
interesting.
Like, I can't
also,
do sweet breakfast.
If you ever have a dog that has puppies and you're like getting them off the mom's milk, put in some cottage cheese with dog food.
Oh,
we had a couple.
Did you grow up with puppies?
Yeah, my mom's. Well, our dogs had a couple litters of puppies. They were like West Highland White Terriers, and it was like the cutest things. They're like white dogs. They had like cottage cheese.
You guys didn't think you were going to come away with dog advice, but you did.
It ruined cottage cheese for me.
Oh.
You know, it's with dog food, but hey, you know.
I've never had cottage
dog
cheese.
Dog owner is so you know.
You should try it. The one you can get here, that's it's called like good.
Yeah.
Good cottage cheese. Yeah. It's very good, and you get the like high fat content one.
That seems
very good.
Like
they make little single serves
hard.
Of plain.
It's good.
Good.
They're good.
Very good.
But if you're out on the West Coast, very definitely good. Get Cowgirl Creamery cottage cheese. It's amazing. It'll change your perception of it for sure. All right, cool. Question number five. This is the last question. The film Bicycle Thieves, which was formerly known as The Bicycle Thief, is famous for portraying poverty in post-World War II Italy. What super simple dish is used to illustrate class differences as one wealthy boy eats it with a knife and fork, but the other one, the main character, Bruno, devours it using his hands?
I'm going to say, I've never seen this
I've
movie.
Seen that movie because I went
pizza.
To film school, but I have
I thought
no
it was,
idea.
You're very close. They go into a restaurant and the guy says, we don't serve pizza here. You're going to eat this.
Isn't it like pasta pomodoro or something?
No, it's bread with something on top.
Focaccia? Bread with something on top.
Yeah, chicken liver pate.
Come on, Nick.
Think like you're the chef. Say like the most simple Italian food.
Cheese.
What kind of cheese?
Mozzarella.
You got it.
Oh, so they're basically just eating garlic bread.
They're eating like he eats melted mozzarella on bread.
How
with,
do you
like,
eat
stretches.
That with a knife and fork?
Because he's
like some
too
posh
dinky,
boy.
You know, he's like, oh, I'm gonna cut my pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
And then some other kid's like, I'm just gonna pick up and eat it.
Yep.
Mm. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. Why did they change the name?
Because in the translation, they called it The Bicycle Thief because they thought it sounded good, but it's actually about multiple bicycle thieves. So,
Ladrones.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, yeah, Criterion Collection re-released it and named it The Bicycle Thieves.
You guys should have given us, like, Asian.
Next time.
We intentionally make our trivia really hard.
No, I like it.
Well, at first, when it first started, I was like, oh, like the first two or three questions, I was like, yeah, we got this.
If it was like Italian-American, like, what do they serve calamari with in New England? And we're like,
oh,
marinara sauce and pickled cherry peppers.
Is that only a New England thing?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I think so.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't know. I'm from New England, so I just figured
everybody
did.
There you go. No, I think it's only in New England.
Oh.
Well, I'm from Alabama. Delicious. They don't serve calamari there.
What about
that's why I moved
bung,
here.
Though?
What about what?
What about bung?
Bung?
This is the whole thing. Is it calamari or is it pork bung.
Oh, okay. Chitlins.
Oh, I've heard this rumor. But we just never.
There's a This American Life.
Oh, God.
Oh, shout out to Ira Glass.
Yeah.
Shout out.
He's a regular of ours.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone here, we can all agree, loves Ira Glass.
Absolutely. Yes. Hands down.
I'm going to send him this just so he knows that we all
Oh, my God.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, that would be nice. Hi, Ira.
Hi, Ira. Love you.
If he makes it this far in the show.
Yeah.
Hello.
You're invited on HR and Happy Hour.
Whenever you want.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right.
So cool.
Well, that's our show. You guys won trivia.
I don't think we did, but thank you so much because we really love being here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for making our podcast the first one you ever came on, Emma.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm a big podcast person. Loved being able to be a part of one. It's really special. Well, so thank you so much.
We hope to have you back. Thank you for being out here in Bushwick today. Thank you for trooping through the rain. For us, it makes us feel very special.
Yeah, it was fun.
Hope to see you soon.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks again to Emma Conroy, Nick Timbrow. We'll be back next week.
Yes. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
There's an announcement about an announcement about an announcement about an announcement. Thanks, Amanda Wang, and we'll see you guys next Thursday.
HRN Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.